Good evening, and welcome to the St. Petersburg by Night Podcasting Network. Tonight, we present to you our behind-the-scenes show, After Dark. Everyone, and welcome to the St. Pete by Night Twitch stream, where we play St. Petersburg by Night, a massive multiplayer 5th edition chronicle set in the world of darkness, including Vampire the Masquerade, including Hunt of the Reckoning, including Werewolf the Apocalypse, and hopefully one day, including Mage the Ascension, as well as the many other settings that take place in the world of darkness. My name is Kent, also known as Mishikent on all social media. I am the lead storyteller of St. Pete by Night and the host of St. Pete by Night After Dark, which is what you are tuned into at this very moment. After Dark is our behind-the-scenes program where you get to see the makings of St. Pete by Night behind the curtain. You get to see how it all came together. We also talk to movers and shakers within the St. Pete setting, as well as the world of darkness as a whole. Tonight's topic is actually a very, very special topic. It's one that we've brought to conventions and talked about at great length, which is how to bring the world of darkness into the World Wide Web. And what we did, the tools and tricks we used to make St. Pete by Night a reality. One of the big questions that I get is why I would do something like this, why I would do something like create St. Petersburg by Night, and more importantly, how I went about creating St. Pete by Night. Well, I can answer the first question pretty simply, probably because I'm crazy, to be completely honest. St. Pete by Night is a passion project. It is an educational tool. It is just the embodiment of everything that I have come to learn over 20 plus years, 25 plus years at this point, of World of Darkness experience. I've talked about this in previous After Dark episodes, so go back and watch those on YouTube, as well as following all our social media linked down below here. But really, the idea came from TikTok. I was really big into the D&D TikTok and the Beggar Talk scene. Beggar Talk, for those who don't know, is those who are begging people to play games other than D&D. And I'd seen that there was a massive calling for people to want to play Vampire the Masquerade and the World of Darkness. Not that they were just, you know, looking for it and that they'd had previous experience, but the truth of the matter was they had no experience previously. This was their first ever time kind of trying to find this game. It was on their bucket list of games that they had always wanted to play. Having seen that call, having heard that call, I kind of got it in my brain that maybe I could could bring it to life. Maybe that I could make that dream a reality. When I had first thought of the idea, it was a really, really late night kind of insomnia fueled idea to come up with a server that had a West Marches or Marshes, depending on your specific belief in how it's said, structure game, kind of an open world, play when you can, whoever shows up style game. And I had expected very, very low turnout. I had expected that, you know, a lot of people say they want things, but in the reality of it is, you know, time limitations, interest wanes, you know, all these kind of things. I had thought maybe I'd get 20 or 30 people at the jump, maybe more, maybe less over time, but I did not expect the turnout I got with over 200 people at the first launch of the server showing an intense interest in what was being done here. Having seen me talk about it on TikTok Lives, having seen the specific video I did, or having heard from it from others who had expressed an interest in the world of darkness. So I made it a reality. I started a Discord server, and over time, I learned a lot of tricks and tips and tools for how to kind of bring this into reality, how to make this possible. So from my experience, I would say if you are interested in starting your own game, in starting your own Discord server, I mean, especially in a post-pandemic world where virtual seems to be a lot easier to accomplish than in-person tables, my first advice to you would be don't. I don't say that because, you know, I have any fear of competition or because I have any, you know, worries about people going out and indulging in the game. In fact, I would say, please do. Please go indulge in the game. Please spread the word about the world of darkness. The success of the game is based off of the popularity, and the more popular it is, the more books they sell, the more material the rest of us will get. But the reality of it is, it's a lot of work. And I think a lot of people underestimate the amount of commitment they can give to TTRPGs, you know, because of work, because of familial commitments, because of friendships, because of keeping an active social life. Those are, you know, very, very demanding, and therefore doing something to the scale of a St. Pete by Night or a, you know, open world massive game is, you know, a near impossibility for most. But I do encourage people to make smaller table games, to try it, to throw their hat in the ring for storytelling, to explore the material, because there is so much material to explore, and you're going to have an endless kind of font of resources that you can dig your teeth into, metaphorically speaking, and really, you know, feel out and get involved with. All those things that I mentioned before as, you know, inhibitors from being able to do this, I don't have those problems. I'm very fortunate enough to be able to kind of make this my primary focus a majority of the time in my life, and really dump a lot of love and a lot of effort into making this game a reality. And so I'm very, very, very fortunate to be able to do it. When we first started the server, I was easily putting 60 to 80 hours a week into the game, including looking over characters, building story, kind of crafting all of the different elements that make this server, this setting, this game a success for me. And so it was a lot of commitment. And if you can't dedicate that level of commitment, you will see, you know, a much slower and smaller growth to your game. But I do encourage people to throw their hat in and try it. I do encourage people to do their research, to learn the system, to learn the setting, to learn the possibilities that are the World of Darkness, because it is my favorite game system, hands down. The World of Darkness setting, Vampire the Masquerade specifically, but also I'm growing a love for Werewolf the Apocalypse, and you know, I've been kind of dipping my toes in the water of other splats within the setting as well. And it is just, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful, beautiful setting. Before we get into too much more, I'd like to remind everyone that as this is After Dark, we do have the chat, which is going on the side of the screen here. So feel free to submit your questions as we go along, and I will answer them as best as I can here on the stream. So don't hesitate to do that. Also, I'm pleased as punch to announce that we have another giveaway today. Our giveaway is sponsored by our very own Bera the Bard, a professional DM, storyteller, GM over on Start Playing. He has offered up as a sponsor a one-shot for you and your friends in any of the systems that he is able to run, including Dungeons & Dragons, including Vampire the Masquerade, and many, many, many more. And he will use tools like Foundry or Discord or D&D Beyond. He has a lot of services, a lot of ability to run a variety of games, and I definitely, definitely encourage people to throw their hat in, again, for that giveaway. Bera can be found over at startplaying.games/GM/Bera-the-Bard. But for tonight's giveaway, a free one-shot, which I believe runs anywhere from 2 to 4 hours for you and 4 or 5 of your friends, they do not have to be part of the server to participate, is yours. All you have to do is throw in hashtag Bera, that's B-E-A-R-A, in the chat, and you will be in the running for a free one-shot of your choice with Bera the Bard in any system that he is capable of running. So I definitely suggest everybody throw their hat in for that. That is hashtag Bera in the chat, and you could be in the running to win that free 2 to 4 hour one-shot with Bera the Bard. So, to make a community like St. Pete by Night happen, there are a variety of things you need. One of those things is people you trust. Foundationally, you need people that you can rely on, people that are as passionate and as committed as you are to the project to make something like this even happen. It is a labor of love, not just by myself, but by every single member of the moderator and storyteller team. When you get, you know, games of the size and communities of the size of St. Pete by Night, you have to be able to delegate. You have to have people who are willing to show up and do the work, especially unpaid, which I'm very fortunate to be able to have such a loving community that is, you know, willing to do the work and willing to participate as much as they do, considering that there isn't a great deal of income available in such a venture. But you need to have people that have a similar mindset to you, a similar vision to you, a willingness to work and collaborate with you, but also a willingness to do what you need to tell them to do. And that's a lot to ask of somebody without pay. That's a lot to consider of somebody who is, you know, joining such an endeavor. And I think that a lot of people, again, you know, underestimate how much work it's going to be, and they overestimate how much they're able to commit. And so there is a lot of kind of figuring that out as you go. There's a lot of, you know, trial and error, and there's a lot of compromise and accommodations, and you have to be willing to work with people and understand the limitations they have if you want them to be able to participate, which, believe me, you do. The willingness to make accommodations for people's, you know, conflicts and work schedules and how much they're willing to give is a big part of it. You can't have higher expectations for your staff than you put on yourself. You have to be reasonable. You have to be realistic if you are going to be able to make an endeavor like this work. Now, I was very lucky right off the bat. I had met some amazing people from TikTok, as well as incorporating people who were my real life friends, people that I've worked with and known in the world of darkness over the course of my 25-year history. One of them being one of my closest in-person friends, Caffeinatrix, who you'll get to meet in a few weeks here on After Dark. She was one of the foundational pieces of starting this server. She was one of the people that had seen me as a storyteller when I was 21, 22 years old, and then growing from there. And, you know, I had come to know her as a storyteller, as a player, as a, you know, creative of sorts. And so I had a very foundational level of trust there that I was able to invest in an individual like Caffeinatrix. And so that was really helpful starting out and building up the server from that foundational point. Then also, you take a chance. You have to take a risk and you have to invite people in as the needs, you know, present themselves. You need to take a risk on people and give them the chance to prove themselves, challenge them, and, you know, allow them to make their own mistakes and trust them when they say what they can do and what they're willing to do in order to be involved. And I've been very, very fortunate to have some amazing staffers that have been with me since day one who I took a chance on. I know they had some experience in the World of Darkness, but I had never played a World of Darkness game with them before. I had never, you know, really gotten to know them more than what was, you know, available to me through our conversations on the on TikTok Lives or in DMs. And so it did require a little bit of risk, but with that risk came reward. Now, of course, there were other instances with people who didn't work out, people who came their way through the staff or through the server, and didn't end up staying or weren't able to, you know, mesh well. And that's a part of it too. But you have to be willing to delegate. You have to be willing to allow other people to help you. Speaking personally, I am very much a control freak. And I have a very, very hard time relieving or releasing that kind of control to other people because I know how I want things done. I know, you know, what I expect of myself, but allowing people to take that kind of responsibility is absolutely necessary. And it's the same in work as it is in life. It's management is very much a real thing, and community management is very much a career for a lot of people. And so a lot of this comes from, you know, community management and experience working with other people, but you know, it does come with an ups, its ups and downs. So I had to figure it out as I went. But once we did set up the Discord, once we did get to the community going, we had to find out kind of in practice how to go about doing something like this. Now, I'd had some experience with some D&D West Marches servers and some D&D communities, but I hadn't really found or been a part of any World of Darkness-based communities. Now, the World of Darkness and the community surrounding the World of Darkness has a tumultuous history. It is a game that definitely calls to some of the more toxic elements of society while also being very appealing to the more creative elements of society. And a big part of that is kind of finding out who's who, figuring it out, and realizing that you're going to get a lot of both. And kind of giving people the chance to show themselves for who they are and then eventually filtering it out. And one way you do that is through consent forms. Now, when I had started TTRPGs, consent forms weren't a thing. You were usually just sitting down with your friends and playing and potentially having to come across some problematic subjects, but just, you know, gritting and bearing it or having the conversation at the time. But when you open up a community, you're going to have a vast variety of people. And so we put together probably the most comprehensive consent form I have ever seen. And I've filled out some since, but we really did put together a very, very comprehensive consent form. And we were able to warn players that, you know, while people may have certain issues they bring up on their consent forms that, you know, we can't just accept everybody's consent form as law. You know, we can't write off everything. What we can do is allude to certain things rather than depict them, but you have to be, you know, you have to be a little bit willing to compromise on some of the things that come up on your consent form as well. Also, there's you have to know the type of story, the type of game, the type of setting that it is, and the type of issues that are potentially going to come up and that you're going to potentially come across. And you have to kind of decide based off of the consent form whether some people are a good fit for the game or not. And there were more than a few instances where we received consent forms where people were looking for more of a lighthearted game that didn't deal in, you know, some of the more heavy elements, but to truly have a full World of Darkness experience, you have to recognize that it is, in fact, the World of Darkness and not the world of happy, shiny puppies. And that does lead to some difficult conversations, which if you were going to start a server or start a community set in the World of Darkness, you're going to have a lot of awkward, uncomfortable, and difficult conversations. So that's another thing you have to kind of have in your toolkit as someone who is going to administrate and run a server. You have to be ready to have those hard conversations. You have to be ready to talk about uncomfortable subjects, and you have to be willing to say you're not a good fit and let people go, knowing that they may go off somewhere and, you know, have some bad things to say about you because of it. But you have to be willing to do that to make it successful and make it work. You're not going to be able to accommodate everyone. You have to decide what your lines are, what your expectations are, and you have to stick to those as best as possible to make the type of game you want to make. And it does take some learning over time. It does take some making some adjustments and some compromises and figuring it out. But if you have a general idea of what you're looking to do, you can find out pretty early on, as people are showing interest, as people are joining, as people are getting involved, if they are the type of people that you want to work with on projects like this. Another thing that helps is having a very, very comprehensive Discord server. Now, this was something that took a great deal of trial and error for us to do. We had to create a list of rules. I think we started originally with 4 rules. Now we're up to like 10 or 11, just server and community guidelines rules, in order to kind of set the tone for what our community was. And while it started off very simple, you know, we learned by doing. We learned by trial and error and practice that we needed to be a little bit more thorough and a little bit more expansive on developing our community and what the guidelines for that community were going to be. But honestly, I have found that simplicity is best. You don't need to get as detailed or as thorough as, you know, you might see in some guidelines and standards. You lay it out there and make it as simple and easy to read as possible. A big thing that I've learned, especially from online communities, is that people don't read. It's very unlikely they're going to read anyway. So if you can give them less to read than ever, your chances of them reading the material do go up fairly significantly. So having a simple, straightforward standards and practices, guidelines, document to read is the best way so that you can refer to it if people are in violation of it, but you don't have to be so thorough as to have deeply buried subsections where people are very unlikely to catch it and will likely miss it. Also, it's a lot less work for you to have to go dig those kind of things out. But putting together a Discord server, you're going to want an admin section. You're going to want a general out-of-character section. You're going to want your kind of rules section. And you're going to want your in-character section. So you're going to have a lot of Discord channels. I think at one point, for sure, our server had over 80 or so channels, only about 20 or 30 of those available to players most of the time, depending on your circumstances. And that's just what the reality of the beast, the nature of the beast. So getting to learn Discord, getting to learn how to give certain privacy settings, how to make certain channels visible and other channels invisible, is a big part of of making a community. And you can learn that through practice. You can learn that through research in advance. You can prepare for it long in advance of having people join. But we learned a lot through doing. And I think we also have something like 60 different roles that we can assign to people that allow them certain visibility, certain, you know, access to channels that they wouldn't have if they did not have those roles. So it's a lot. It's very overwhelming at first to get used to the kind of tech savvy that you might need to do something like an internet gaming community. But it's a lot easier than it looks like. And there are lots and lots of help guides. There are a lot of walkthroughs. You can Google pretty much anything and get instantaneous answers. And even with all of the Discord updates that you get over time, you'll figure it out. If you have the desire, if you have the interest, you will figure it out. You will get through it and you will make it happen. So I definitely suggest, you know, just diving in and giving it a shot and experimenting. You can create as many servers as you like without any people in it to experiment in and to kind of play with some of the functions that you have accessible to you. But as a server owner or a moderator, the more channels you have is the more you have to see every day, the more you have to scroll through every day, the more notifications you get every day. So there are a lot of ways to streamline it, but while it seems like, oh yeah, we can make a channel for that, oh yeah, we could add another forum for that, it's just more to have to look through. And while you can, it's a lot easier for players to not see certain parts of the server, you do as a server owner or as a moderator. So just bear that in mind. Now, we've been fortunate over the past 2.5 years to see Discord evolve in a lot of ways. Most of them good, some of them less so. But we've learned as we've gone, and the technology has offered a lot of opportunities that we didn't have when we first started the server. We had a channel for everything when we first started the server, and now with the forum features that they have, we are able to kind of condense a lot of the different channels that we had down into forums or into threads. So those are very, very useful functions that you can use that are at your disposal to kind of help organize and help kind of condense everything down in a way that makes it a lot more accessible to your players as well as a lot more accessible to you. Once you have your community, you will start to acknowledge the strengths and weaknesses within your community, and the more generous members of the community will come forward with amazing ideas, amazing suggestions, and amazing offers of help. And I know I have spoken so highly of this individual so many times here on a variety of streams, but really this game wouldn't be as tech savvy or as amazing as it is if it wasn't for our webmaster, Kyrie. And with that, we had our St. Pete by Night website, which can be found at stpetebynight.com. Our tech wizard has made some amazing things happen, including embedded streams, including staff pages, including game pages, a wide variety of resources, links to our supporters and to our sponsors. It has been a absolute godsend from Kyrie, and it has been so incredible to have the resources we have because of his willingness to just float the idea out there of help and my willingness to take a chance and really put the full powers of kind of a website and the control of a website in his hands. And I'm so grateful that I did. So finding out who your tech geniuses are can also provide some amazing and wonderful kind of additions to your community and to your environment. Shifting over to the chat, we have a question from Hugo, aka Jay, who says, how do you come to deal with trolls and problematic players? What helped you to distinguish between people who just wanted to cause problems and players who want to do good but have problem tendencies? So that's a really difficult kind of thing to navigate, and there is a lot of trial and error, and you're going to get burned. I know I've been burned plenty of times by people who I kept giving chances to, and they really didn't want to improve. They really didn't want to get better. They just really were there to cause problems. But I also had people that I gave chances to that ended up paying off. So really, you have to discover individually for yourselves kind of what your boundaries are, what your willingness to take abuse is. I've seen some very cutthroat community managers who, you know, one error and you're out the door, regardless of, you know, it was an accident or, you know, you're well-intended. But I've also seen people who just let way too much through. I think my way of dealing with problematic players is my way of dealing with problematic people. I have my boundaries. I try to be as very clear in my communications. And I have a knack for kind of reading people and getting an idea of the type of people I'm working with or the type of people who are joining the community and the way they respond to kind of being confronted with their own actions or with consequences. Some of the problematic people will bail out the minute they're, you know, caught or the minute they're confronted. Other problematic people will have a million excuses as to why, you know, they didn't do what you say they're doing, or, you know, as to why they misunderstood something that you thought was fairly clearly worded. You can kind of just get a feel for it. The more people that you encounter, the more people that you work with, the more people that you have those types of conversations with, you can kind of start to see the forest for the trees, as it were. And get a really good vibe on who's going to be more problematic and who's going to be less problematic. Sorry, I'm going to plug in my headset here as it gave me the boop of dying. Ah, there we go. And so you really do have to have kind of your bare minimum of expectation. You know, I usually say if I have to confront someone, if they're instant reaction is to defend themselves or to turn it around or to blame shift, that they're probably somebody that I don't want to work with. I don't mind hearing people's explanations for stuff, but really, if you've done something wrong, regardless of if it was intentional or not, just say you're sorry. It's not hard to do. It's not hard to say, I'm sorry, it was a mistake, it won't happen again. That's really all I want in those scenarios, is for someone to receive what I'm saying, to understand what I'm saying, and to, you know, kind of do their best not to repeat the mistake. But then, like I said, you're going to run into those people that are always going to have an answer for everything, always going to have an excuse for everything. And it's really up to you how much of that you're willing to put up with. I usually don't. I don't put up with a great deal of it. And even more so over time, I've become less and less interested in putting up with that kind of stuff. But yeah, just have your boundaries and stick to them. Have your, you know, minimum, and then you can raise and lower it and adjust it over time. But just really decide, you know, I'm not going to take a certain amount of crap. I'm going to draw a certain line. And if you cross that line, good, bad, or otherwise, you're out. But another big thing is just being very transparent about what it is you're looking for from people, of what it is you're looking for from players or community members. And if they can't follow your transparent communication about what you're looking for, they're not a good fit. Doesn't make them a bad person. It doesn't make them a troll. It doesn't make them a, you know, a problematic player. It just means that there is a missing level of respect there. There is a missing level of understanding. I know that respect is earned, but I have started this community. I've been running this community. You made the choice to join this community as, you know, as a community member. And with that, a certain expectation of respect is there, at least for the rules that we've set down, at least for the individuals who make it happen, and that are doing the work to provide the entertainment that players are looking for, or community members are looking for. And if they can't do that, I don't have to earn anything. You don't have to earn anything. Like, you can just show them the door. This is yours. This is your community. This is your server. And you're able to kind of just show them the door if they're going to be problematic. The next question comes from Anonymous81, who says, can you give us an insight into you and your team's processes in developing a world story or weaving tales together across multiple tables? Do you centralize the story yourself, or is it a group effort? So, that is an excellent question. Really, when the game started, it was just me. I was running for 90-plus players by myself, running sessions almost every day of the week for multiple hours a day. And it was all a story that I came up with. So as we evolved over time, you know, players or storytellers kind of got their own sections. It went from one of us to three of us to five of us for a good while, and then back down to three at the end. And so people kind of got given their own sections to deal with, their own stories to deal with. And yes, there may have been some intersection, but really, like, everyone got their own plot. We had Mimic handling the Anarchs. We had Barra kind of running the Mage storyline, the Theo storyline, and the people involved in the Theo storyline. And then we had me for oversight. So what we do nowadays is, while we have our separate tables, and while they don't really bleed over each other so much, we have weekly and bi-weekly meetings where we discuss these kinds of things, where we lay out kind of what's the overall central storyline, what is it we're going for, and what effect do the players have on each other and each other's tables. And while we haven't really launched into any overall world stories in the revamp, prior to the revamp, we definitely had a lot of conversations of, like, okay, you know, Barra is running the primary storyline with the Theo storyline at this time. So how is that storyline going to impact all the other settings? How's it going to impact the Camarilla? How's it going to impact the Hunters? How's it going to impact, you know, the Anarchs in the North? And those are the kind of discussions that we have, and then we slowly roll out those effects. And that actually brings me up to another great feature that we implemented in the revamp, but that has always kind of existed, which is our threat meter. So while we, in our own mind, had kind of a overall idea of what the threat on the general, you know, setting was based off of the storytellers, we actually put it, or the stories being told, we actually put it into something that is accessible to the players and is impactful to the players. Originally, we had, you know, a story that kind of had a more fluid kind of overarching plot that anybody could get involved with, or anybody could, you know, be affected by. Now, with the more separated tables, we still have this amazing feature that says, hey, your players and your tables can still impact other players and other tables. And we've illustrated that, like I said, through the threat meter here, and through the various categories of potential threats that cause the threat meter to raise and lower. So that's kind of a way that we do it. You have to give or take a little bit. And again, it's deciding who's really behind the wheel of the overall story at any given time, who's going to have primary control of the overarching story. Again, at the end, it was primarily Barra with the Theo storyline, but in the early days with the Second Inquisition storyline and some of the other storylines we had, it was me. I was basically giving out marching orders, and the storytellers were running their own personal stories or their own smaller stories. But as far as the overarching storyline was concerned, you usually have a captain and then you have a bunch of crew who are just making that storyline happen and, you know, are bringing the consequences that you've put down onto the other players, and knowing the reactions, and a lot of kind of prior planning, but also a lot of open communication. All of my storytellers are very, very communicative. There's not a long wait time for responses. There's not, you know, a lot of unnecessary back and forth. Like, everybody is very, very upfront and very communicative about, you know, what they're doing. They're not afraid to ask questions. They're not afraid to make suggestions. And that's something that I really, really appreciate about my team and really encourage others to look for in their teams. Like, yes, they should do what you say if you're the lead storyteller or the, you know, community manager. But you should also be open to feedback, and you should be checking in with them, because, again, this is free volunteer work you're receiving. These people are volunteering their time to try and help make something that you've created into something amazing. So you need to be open to feedback from them. You need to be open to suggestions from them. And you need to realize that, you know, your idea isn't always the best idea, and that maybe someone else out there has something to offer, especially after you're doing it long enough and maybe you're on the border of burnout, or maybe you're a little creatively drained. It's good to have people who can really put out a fresh perspective or a fresh idea. Also, bringing people onto the team that were players, you know, that played under you or played in your games, also gives you a really good insight into kind of the effect that you've had and the impression they've received from your efforts. So yeah, it's very collaborative, but we usually do have someone directing traffic as far as world events are concerned, and then delegating, you know, certain responsibilities and having those regular meetings and those regular conversations to say, okay, where are we at in the story? You know, what kind of effects has this had, spreading out those consequences and repercussions to everybody that is participating in it. And then just trusting them to do what your vision states, and being available to answer any questions they have about, you know, what is going to, how you'd like to see it done, or, you know, how you'd like to move forward with the story. So yeah, just a lot of communication, a lot of collaboration. That's really how it happens. But definitely, again, making one person the director, the rest of the people kind of the grips and the staff and the assistants to help with it. St. Petersburg by Night is brought to you through collaborations with our partnered vendors, Wolfpack Dice, Ember Fox Dice, Dragon Ink Dice, Vera the Bard, Champs Tramps, Panchi Artista, and Chromatic Creations. Links to our partner vendors, as well as our Twitch and YouTube channels, can be found on our website, stpetebynight.com. The official theme song for St. Petersburg by Night is Vampire by Faith and Failure. You can find them at faithandfailure.com. You can follow SPBN on all socials with the hashtag StPeteByNight. If you wish to support our program, you can do so at ko-fi.com/StPeteByNight to help keep the stories rolling. Another thing that I recommend to people in creating kind of an open world game is really giving gravity to the world. Something that the World of Darkness kind of excels in, that I have found other settings don't, is that it's set in our own world. It's our actual real world. There are, you know, a lot of games that work in fantasy settings, or some people take the impetus upon themselves to create their own settings. But in the World of Darkness, it's the real setting. So we have our city map. This is where we give the players an opportunity to kind of have a presence by establishing their own businesses, by claiming their own territories, by getting, you know, a marking on the map, something that really stands out as theirs, or something that really, you know, gets them invested in the setting. But also, it allows people to kind of zoom in and get a realistic idea, especially through things like Google Maps, where you can get a street view perspective of where what you're looking at, what you're visualizing, what you are traveling through and enduring and dealing with. I think that having that kind of real life visualization is definitely a difference maker for telling a good story and telling a good game. That's not to say dynamic storytelling isn't still required in some fashion, but it does take a lot of the pressure off. You don't have to create a street and buildings in your mind. You can for certain stories, but you can really just rely on what the world has created for you, what the actual real world setting is. You can use real world businesses. You can use, you know, real world locations. And it's just a very, very nice feature in the World of Darkness. It takes a lot of pressure off. It takes a lot of the work off. Excuse me. And the real world can inspire creativity. You know, you can go check out a specific neighborhood or a specific location, and just based off of the real imagery of it, it could spark creativity as a storyteller or as a player. You know, knowing you see this, that there's a lot of food trucks in town, maybe you create a food truck-based character. You see that there are a lot of parks, you know, that shows you good places to hide or to set up a haven. There's just a lot of opportunities using the real world as a setting provides that you don't necessarily have in fictional or fantasy settings. And that's another thing that makes the World of Darkness so great in my mind, is the ability to be able to do that. Once again, I want to let everyone know that we are having a giveaway tonight. Giveaway is for a free one-shot session for you and your friends with Bera the Bard, professional game master, storyteller, DM. Bera has obviously been a longtime storyteller on St. Pete by Night, and I know that a lot of the people who have played with him have absolutely enjoyed it. And there are a lot of people who are champing at the bit to play with Bera the Bard, and this is your opportunity to do so. You could get a free one-shot for, you know, three to five of you and three to five of your friends that don't have to be on the server to play a variety of games, including Dungeons & Dragons, including Vampire the Masquerade, and many, many more, using tools like Foundry, D&D Beyond, and a vast variety of other services that Bera offers. Bera can be found, and the list of his games and services can be found at startplaying.games/GM/Bera-the-Bard. And for tonight's giveaway of that free one-shot, all you have to do is put hashtag Bera, B-E-A-R-A, in the chat, and you will be entered into the drawing to win a one-shot with Bera the Bard. His one-shots usually run anywhere from 2 to 4 hours, and they are high-quality, great storytelling, excellent preparation. There's a reason he's part of the storyteller team and has been for as long as he has, because he is insanely talented, and anybody who gets this opportunity will have quite the experience with their friends. So hashtag Bera gets you into the drawing in the chat, so feel free to submit those all throughout the broadcast, and I will draw the winner of that one shot by the end of the evening. So definitely get in on that. So, running the game itself. I am one of those rare types that doesn't do a great deal of prep work. When I run sessions, I am a very improvisational storyteller. And this can be, at times, very problematic for running a collaborative game with other people, as, you know, I might get an idea and all of a sudden it's canon. And it's out there and it's part of the game. So it's definitely not something I'd suggest if you are planning on running a team-based thing. But it's what works for me, and thankfully I've had some amazing, amazing staffers who've just been able to roll with those punches and keep on going. But having a established, notated kind of setting with specific NPCs kind of outlined and placed in spaces are good to have. Having, you know, resources available, understanding, you know, what these places look like, what these NPCs are, helps. And so one thing that we've been developing and updating behind the scenes is an SPC roster, which has all of the SPCs that the storytellers have created, so we don't have conflicts in canon. So somebody doesn't say, like, oh, this is the Toreador Primogen from Orlando, that they bring into their game, and then a different Toreador Primogen from Orlando comes into another game, and there's confusion over which one's real, unless that was the story. So we've been working really hard on kind of getting all of that outlined and figured out. Now, luckily, over the past 2 years, we haven't really run into any issues of canon disparagements or any discrepancies in canon. We've been pretty good at having a strong understanding, but again, that goes back to collaboration, that goes back to communication, and that goes to regular meetings that we have on a regular basis, where we have a very foundational understanding of what each individual storytelling is doing at their table, offering them suggestions or tips, or making them aware before it happens, like, hey, if you're going down this, you know, road, be very careful because I've already established some stuff, or there's some stuff I don't want, you know, messed with in that particular area, or, you know, overall, like the reliance on explosions has something that we've been able to kind of pull back on because we saw that they were getting a little bit out of control. And so we kind of tried to dial back on that a little bit, even though it doesn't feel like it sometimes. We've had to dial back on those kinds of issues in the past to try and create more creative opportunities, more creative solutions to some of the stories that we have been telling. So those are great ways to kind of set a framework for your game. Also, the best way to run a game is to be reliable, to always be there when you say you're going to be there, and if you're not, to communicate when you're not going to. One of the things that we implemented in the revamp is a three-strike policy that goes not just for players, but for storytellers as well, because accountability goes both ways. And part of that being accountable is saying, is showing up when you say you're going to show up, and to communicate to those that you play with when you're not going to be able to, with enough notice that they will be able to shift their plans or their expectations to be able to attend or not attend any rescheduling. So being accountable and having a clear-cut kind of rules and expectations system for, you know, when you're going to be running the game, and just sticking with it. You're going to have some slow days. You're going to have some days where people don't show up. But if you stay consistent, people will show up out of respect for what you're doing, out of respect for your time. You will grow your player base if you have events that are regularly scheduled that you always show up for, that you aren't canceling on, that you aren't, you know, rescheduling on a regular basis. So when a storyteller starts a table, you know, we make it pretty clear, like, when are you getting scheduled and are you going to be able to make it? And if they fail to do so, they could potentially lose the table or potentially lose their role as a storyteller. It's just very, very important to us that communication happens, that consistency happens. And so starting with that in scheduling your games is, or starting your community is very, very fundamental. It's just setting a good standard for the other members of your team. You know, you can't expect your team to do better than you. You need to be the one, if you are starting the game, if you are the community manager, you need to be the one setting the standard that they are trying to reach. You set the bar through your actions, and then you can judge people on based off of how close they get to that bar, obviously making compromises for their time and whatnot. But yeah, just making, setting an example is such an important part of leading a team, of running a community, of starting a game. Another thing that helps in kind of creating a massive open world game like we have on St. Pete by Night is social media. Obviously, this all started as a social media experience quite some time ago. It started under the concept of, you know, a TikTok idea, a TikTok video, and then grew into a TikTok community, and then grew into the St. Pete by Night community, where people have long since faded from TikTok, myself included, and prefer to stay primarily involved just within the Discord and the community. So as you can see here, we have, you know, content that we've posted, we have a social media presence, but really more important than our videos, our channel, is the hashtag St. Pete by Night, where you can see we had over 8,400 individual posts using the hashtag St. Pete by Night. You know, in TikTok, in the community. So we have been able to kind of create a brand, create a community just based around the hashtag. So if you are looking to create a stream or create a, you know, community-based game, branding is very, very important. There's also an investment into that branding as well. So, for example, all of the artwork that you've seen on our community was commissioned, was paid for. So there is a certain cost that comes with investing into something like this as well. So budgeting yourself and realizing that making something that looks good, like the streams do, making something that looks, you know, that has nice art, like the server does, is an investment. And higher quality servers, higher quality streams and websites are what attract people's interest. It shows how invested you are. It shows how much work you put into something. If you have the skills, you can save money doing that. If you have members of your team who are willing to do it, as their contribution, like the website for us, that's a great thing to have too. But also just being willing, because you believe in what you're doing, to invest in it is a big part of it too. Our first St. Pete logo, which was the lips and the teeth and the city skyline, I paid for that before we'd even gotten the game going, because I knew the importance of branding, because I truly believed in this project and invested in this project right out the gate, because it's important. It shows the players too that you are serious about this just as much as you expect them to be, as much as you want them to be. So again, it goes back to setting a good example, saying, hey, I'm in this. You know, we created these backgrounds, we created the logos, we've definitely given a glow up on our stream since we first started in on our Discord. And I think those things really, really make a huge, huge difference for creating a good community. Then just having knowledge of where you set your story. That's another big thing of running a good game, is just knowing the area. It doesn't have to be a place you live, but if you're going to do a place that you don't live, you should really, really put your time and research into knowing the feel of that place, knowing the kind of layout of that place, and being able to accurately represent those places, places when you do run your game. You know, being able to paint a very vivid picture. Yes, you have tools like, you know, Google Street View and whatnot that can really create a good picture of it. But really, if you can also represent it very, very well through knowing the area. So I chose St. Pete because I live in St. Pete. I've been around St. Pete, and St. Pete definitely gave me a very strong vibe about the type of vampire city it would be. Also, welcome raiders to the stream. We're just talking about taking the World of Darkness off of the tabletop and putting it into the World Wide Web like we do here on St. Pete by Night. So getting a good feel for the area, knowing the history of it, really helps knowing the kind of atmosphere of it, because there's a lot you can learn through research, but you get a lot more of an idea through people who are actually on the streets experiencing the environment. A lot of the details that I bring into describing St. Pete is in saying, hey, you know, it feels like this. It can be sometimes a very racially charged atmosphere, but also it is a very liberal area of Florida. Because I live it, I experience it, I know it, I can really relay that to our players and really show them the type of community that we have and the type of environment that we have. And I think that helps them get inspired in creating stories, in creating characters, in, you know, giving some background and some depth to the characters that they play. So I think that's also a very kind of important part of creating a setting. But technically speaking, it really doesn't require a lot of technical know-how to put together a Discord server, to put together a community, to play games online. The more you invest and the more you learn, the better. The better it'll look, the better it'll go, the more problems you'll be able to solve. But really, if you can create a Discord server, a few basic channels, you can easily run a game for you and your friends on the World Wide Web that you would not have the capability to do in person. Plus, being, you know, having this online format is a lot easier to get people together than if you were to do it in person. A lot less issues that you're going to run into with people showing up, because they can show up from the comfort of their own homes. They don't have to change their routine very much to be able to fit in a game. They can connect via mobile. You know, we've had several players who have played from their phones while they were on vacation or while they were out of the house. They could at least tune in and participate that way. So it's a really great way to connect with people, you know, that you wouldn't be able to see normally in person. Also, it's a good way to connect with people all over the world. St. Pete by Night, you know, boasts players from France and Australia. We had some people in South Korea for a little while. We had some people in South America for a while. Like, we've had a vast network of people over a large kind of all over the world, over a large span of space. Which is something, Brazil, yep, you know, something that you couldn't have in an in-person format. That's not to say there aren't plenty of benefits about meeting in person, but I've met so many amazing, incredible individuals. I've had so many incredible stories and experiences. I mean, the fact that we still have this game going is incredible, is something beyond what I had ever dreamed about, and I think that more people are coming into this kind of way of doing things. The old web forums, as Adderworks says in the chat, is a perfect example. Play by post, play by text. You know, I ran an E-Federation, which was a wrestling role-playing game on a play by post server. It's been around. The concept of this isn't new. It's just kind of evolving as things do over time. There was also MUDs, Moos, Mushes, Mucks, as Double Magus mentions. I participated in a lot of those. So I've been doing computer-based role-playing games for a very, very long time. I mean, even dating back to when I was a teenager, when I joined my first MUD, which is called Multi-User Dungeon, a text-based kind of role-playing server, was back when I was 14 years old, and I'm 40 now, so dating myself a little bit there. But there were, it's not a new concept of people trying to connect over great distances. It's just something that has gotten a lot easier. a lot easier, a lot more accessible. You don't have to go digging throughout the bowels of the internet to find these kind of resources. They are a lot more accessible than ever before. Discord is, despite its issues, incredible. Services like Fantasy Grounds have now picked up Vampire the Masquerade. Also, a service known as Demiplane has a virtual tabletop function for Vampire the Masquerade. The material is accessible. Now, like D&D Beyond, like some of the other virtual tabletops, you do have to pay to get the resources. So if you buy the book, you're going to end up buying the book again. Or you have to be willing to go through the arduous effort of programming everything in yourself, which isn't the end of the world, but it is very, very time consuming for those of you who aren't willing to invest in the materials. But I've tried out the, you know, the virtual tabletops of Fantasy Grounds and of Demiplane. They were great. They've got good functions. They're very user friendly. And they've got resources. They're a little bit behind on the materials that have been released, but they are slowly but surely catching up. And I know they're doing Kickstarters all the time to add the newer books to Fantasy Grounds and some of the other sources. So supporting those, you could get Hunter the Reckoning on Fantasy Grounds. I believe Werewolf is out or is coming out on Fantasy Grounds. Most of the Vampire the Masquerade material is on Fantasy Grounds. So you can get the resources you need to run a online, you know, game pretty accessibly. And I like the virtual tabletops personally. I do like the idea of being able to use maps, being able to roll the virtual dice. Speaking of virtual dice, we were very fortunate enough that our webmaster, web wizard extraordinaire, Kyrie, was able to put a dice bot together for us. But before that, we used a resource called Chronicles of Darkness. I believe that's what it's called. Let me just double check. But there was a pre-existing dice bot that did give you a Realm of Darkness. That's what it's called. Realm of Darkness that did have a dice bot. And having virtual dice is very, very nice. People who are trying World of Darkness for the first time pretty much are pretty guaranteed not to have the dice required to run a Vampire the Masquerade game. It's a lot of D10s and no other dice. So unless they're rolling the one or two D10s they have over and over and over again, it's very unlikely that people are going to have it. So really relieving people of the necessity to go buy dice and providing a service like Realm of Darkness or other dice bots to your players can be very, very helpful. And I know our dice bot has been able to incorporate hunter mechanics and werewolf mechanics as well, but Realm of Darkness does have a lot of the basic mechanics of that you need for World of Darkness, for rolling rouse checks and blood surges and dice pools and incorporating hunger into the rolls. So it also, yeah, it does make things very transparent to your players. It does get everyone on an even playing field, and while people hates the dice bot because they like to say it's hungry, that's part of the fun. One of the things I love about World of Darkness is failing in World of Darkness. I like it in my other role-playing games too, but I especially love it in World of Darkness. I love the trauma. I love the struggle. I love having to overcome various issues, even ones created by myself. And so dice bots help with that. It also does make the dice rolls very transparent. So if you have a worry about certain problematic players, as Hugo had mentioned before, one way to do it is to make it transparent, to require players to use the dice bot at your tables so that there is an even, open playing field amongst all the players, that they all have the even expectations. And while it is a little bit to get used to using, there is a little bit you have to learn. Our dice bot has a how-to guide now on the website. So if you are struggling with learning how to use the dice bot, all of the commands are available on our website under, I believe, resources. But I will check that while I'm sitting here talking right now. Yes, under resources, we have Dicebot commands now, which is a new feature on our website where you can see all of the commands and what they do to properly operate the Dicebot on our server. And again, it also helps with people who have to tune in when they're not at home. If they need to join a session from work, from school, from, you know, abroad, whatever the case may be, having that Dicebot means that you're never going to show up to a session without dice. They will always be available, and it's one less burden that players have to struggle with or worry about. Also, you can always keep the up-to-date character sheets from your players on your computer, on your server, so that there's never an excuse for players showing up unprepared and not having the materials they need in order to play the game. Another thing that comes with running an online community is, I talked about earlier, trusting your staff. It's also trusting your players and being willing to cede a certain level of control to your players. Give a certain level of trust to your players. One of the things that made St. Pete by Night so appealing to so many people was OpenRP and the ability to play whenever you want to. That was one of the biggest parts of my vision for the game. That was one of my biggest, you know, most important factors to have come through in the revamp, was the ability to have people play on their own free time. The ability to just meet up with other players, you know, have fluff conversations in characters. You know, we were very strict about not using mechanics, but having people be able to develop those characters and interactions on their own free time without a lot of necessary admin oversight was a very appealing part of St. Pete by Night for a lot of players. Now, of course, we did have problematic people. We did have people who tried to take advantage of those opportunities, but we found those people out and, you know, we removed them from the community. So, yes, you have to be on the lookout. Yes, you have to institute things like notes policies and rules to keep people in line, but if you aren't willing to offer that level of trust to your players, they probably shouldn't be a part of your server, or there's probably other problems at play there that you have to kind of work through and sort out. So find a group that you like playing with and extend to them that trust. And if they abuse it, be ready to have the uncomfortable conversations and the, you know, willpower and the composure to get rid of them, to remove them from the community for the betterment of the overall community. Because, as mentioned at the beginning, the World of Darkness does call to a vast and varied audience of people. So you just have to keep an eye out for those particular individuals and be willing to do what it takes. Again, I'm going to take a quick break here to mention the giveaway we've got going on. A free one-shot from our very own Bera the Bard. He is a storyteller on St. Pete by Night, but a lot of people don't have that amazing opportunity to play at his table or in one of his games. Well, he is a professional game master over on Start Playing, and he does offer a vast variety of systems, including Dungeons and Dragons, including Vampire the Masquerade, plus many, many more. And he incorporates tools like Foundry, like D&D Beyond, and a vast variety of others that will enhance your game playing experience. Plus, he has been running games for such a long time. According to the website here, he's been a player in games for over 16 years. He's been a GM for over 8 years. And on Start Playing alone, he has hosted over 98 games, which is quite an achievement. So you can go play a free one-shot with Bera the Bard by just using the hashtag Bera, B-E-A-R-A, as it's spelled there, in the chat. That'll put you into the running for a game for you and 4 or 5 of your friends to play a free 3 to 4 hour one-shot with Bera the Bard. And I guarantee that is an experience you do not want to miss. I have had the fortune of being able to play in a D&D game of his and a World of Darkness game of his, and they are amazing. So just put hashtag Beara, B-E-A-R-A, in the chat, and you will be in the running for a free one shot. You do not have to be a part of the community to win. You do not have to be a part of the community, or your friends don't have to be a part of the community to play in this game. Just get that free one shot, and I guarantee you'll probably want to have more than that one going forward in the future. Maybe even a whole campaign. Who knows? But anyway, I definitely recommend taking the leap, experimenting, trying. You'll always miss the shots you don't take, and this was a huge gamble and a huge risk for me, financially, time-wise, socially, but it paid off. And I definitely recommend, if you have the passion for this, if you have the drive to make it happen, you don't need to have the know-how. The know-how will come with time. You just have to have the desire to make it happen and the desire to keep it going. You know, before the revamp, I was on the edge of burnout, which would have meant the end of the server, but I made the decision to take it down, you know, restructure some things, put an end to the previous story, and start up a new story, and start up a new game, and really get an entire, you know, new experience going for our players, which I think has been for the betterment of the server, been the betterment for me and my mental health, been the betterment for, you know, my own energy levels and for my drive for the game. So being very aware of yourself and checking in with yourself throughout the whole process is also a very fundamental part of running a game in general, let alone a game of this magnitude and size in such a format as, you know, Discord and an online internet community. But that's led to some incredible experiences like KindredCon, which we talked about in the last After Dark episode, like several player meetups, including myself, who took a drive across the country and literally met 10 or so players, and actually stayed at some of their houses and apartments during the road trip. And now I consider those people very, very close friends of mine, and a very, very important part of my life. So it is worth the opportunity. It is worth the risk. But if you don't, you know, have that level of time to commit, if you don't have that level of energy to commit, you're always welcome in our community. You're always welcome in our game here over at St. Pete by Night. So I definitely encourage everyone to join the server if you aren't a part of it already. As you can tell from our chat, we have, you know, plenty of amazing individuals who are a part of this community and are a part of this experience, and they make the whole thing worthwhile. Our join links are down below, both on YouTube and on Twitch, so you can join our server, become a part of the community, and maybe find some inspiration to go start your own. I have never held any kind of grudge for people who get inspired and go start their own projects. I really think that that's the nature of all of it, is that you're a part of a community, and then you go off and do your own thing, and I'm glad to be the springboard that inspires other people to go and be a part or create their own kind of communities. Another thing that our community has that has helped is we have walkthroughs of creating a character for all three systems. We have lots and lots of extra documentation for people who want to learn more about the World of Darkness or more about the character creation process. We provide a vast variety of resources, including, you know, links to YouTube videos and podcasts for those who want to indulge further. And, you know, we want to educate. That was another big kind of cornerstone for starting this for me, was educating people, because a lot of people did not have any experience, or they'd only heard bad things about the game. And there's so much good and so much creativity in the game that can be had as long as you find the right people to play with. So that being said, unless the chat has any more questions for me tonight, I'm going to keep this episode of After Dark a little bit shorter. I hope you learned something. I hope I gave a little bit of insight into how we transition the World of Darkness to the World Wide Web and all of the benefits that come with it. as well as an honest look into kind of just how difficult it can be, just how intense it can be, just how time, you know, how much time commitment comes with trying to run a game like this. But it's worth it. It's definitely, definitely worth it, and I encourage everyone to do so. Go check out our incredible website, like I talked about before, created by our web wizard Kyrie over at stpetebynight.com. There are links where you can learn about the staff. There are links about where you can learn about the various tables that are currently running, including episodes listed under each game of the ones that have streamed so far. There's our resources that show you the city map that I talked about earlier. There's our links to our sponsors, our incredible sponsors, including Bear of the Bard, as we'd mentioned earlier. So go support them because they are helping support St. Pete by Night. There's also a link to our Ko-fi on the website. If you want to support this game with more than just your wonderful personalities and your presence, you can do so financially. One thing that a lot of people don't know about St. Pete by Night is that it is completely free. We don't charge a dime for being a part of this community, for participating in our games, for just being involved at all. It does not cost anything. In a lot of communities like this, you would have to pay to play. We don't charge anything. So you can support our community by donating to the Ko-fi. It is very, very much appreciated. Also, as I've mentioned, you can go check out our social media using the hashtag St. Pete by Night or just going to at St. Pete by Night on TikTok, Twitter, also known as X, Instagram. You can find all of our past episodes of all of our shows on YouTube and here on Twitch. You can find us anywhere you can find St. Pete by Night. That is where we are. And supporting us on all those locations really, really does make a difference. So thank you so much for doing that. So, I've been pushing it all night. This is your last opportunity to use the hashtag Bera because I am going to make that drawing in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The winner of the giveaway tonight is Great Man King. Great Man King, thank you so much for entering into this contest. You have won a free one shot for you and four of your friends. It was Mirage who won the giveaway, but she's already playing at a table. And then Hugo had already won our last giveaway. So I'm giving it to Great Man King. I did a redraw. So Great Man King, you have won the one shot with Bera the Bard for you and four or five of your friends using D&D, using Vampire the Masquerade, as well as one of many of the other systems. So go ahead and give that a shot, and you will really enjoy yourselves. I have no doubt about it. I'll get in touch with you on the server with the details. I'll put you and Bera in touch, and you'll be able to set up that game. And start making arrangements for that game to take place. So thank you guys all so much for tuning in to After Dark tonight. I really, really appreciate it. Like I said, I hope you learned something. I hope this answers some questions. As always, you can reach out to me anytime on the server to find out more information. I am very transparent about how all this works and how all this happens, and I'm happy to teach. So don't be afraid to do so. Thank you for joining us. Follow all our social media down below. Go support our sponsors. This week, we have Rage Across Tampa on Tuesday. We have Don't Get Caught on Thursday. And we'll be back for another After Dark next Saturday. Also, we will be starting the Bloody Strings story soon. I believe we might do that on a Monday or a Friday, but I will let you guys know, and it'll be on the schedule as soon as we find out. So keep an eye out for that. That is Bear the Bard's game that we will be streaming, so you'll be able to check those out soon enough. But my name's Kent, also known as Misha Kent. You can find me on all social media, and we will talk to you next time. Have a good evening, everyone. Good night. This has been a St. Petersburg by Night production. After Dark is produced in agreement with the World of Darkness and Dark Pack. The host for After Dark is Kent.
Visit our website at stpetebynight.com for more information about all of our productions and how you can become part of our community. Thank you for listening. Until next time, fangs, stakes, and claws out.